You have over 20 options to solve your IRS tax problem, so you need to call the tax resolution specialists of Effector Tax Solutions. Effector ex-IRS agents will put their insider knowledge of the system to work for you, getting levies lifted or released, filing old returns, scouring for ways to reduce your tax debt. Call 866-524-0324 or click the Effector logo located on the media player. Call now and receive 50% off your representation fee. 866-524-0324. 324.
You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show, and periodically I try to solve the greatest problems on earth on this program. We have already cured cancer. We have solved the problem of human evil, but there is one issue that remains unsolved, healthcare. And therefore I have various experts from across the spectrum to opine on this subject. One great expert is Dr. David Gratzer. He is a physician, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He divides his time between Toronto, where they do have government health care, and New York, where they want government health care. And his book is The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Health Care. There's also an article on this very subject by him in the Investor's Business Daily. And it is quite devastating, since he reports that the father of Canadian health care is now saying that the system has essentially failed in Canada. Dr. David Gratzer, welcome to the Dennis Prager Show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So I don't want you to get sick while you're in Toronto.
Fortunately, I'm in good health today.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. All right, let's first talk about this amazing piece of yours in the Investor's Business Daily, wherein the father of Canadian healthcare, Claude Castonguay, has now described his system in crisis. And tell us a little bit about the crisis of Canadian government healthcare.
Sure. Claude Castonguay is a huge figure in Canada, particularly in his home province of Quebec. In the 1960s, he chaired a Quebec committee that considered how health care ought to be paid and run. He didn't simply say that the government ought to pay for health care, which, of course, he did, but he even suggested that the government set up clinics across the country and across his province. He made a variety of other suggestions. In that province, Quebecers who have a health card, which is all legal residents, call it a Castonguay card. So, you know, he's this titanic figure within Canadian policy and the political world, went on to serve in cabinet and a variety of other things. He was asked to review the system earlier this year, again, a Quebec government committee in which he chaired. And quite remarkably, he's gone back and reconsidered. He suggests, quote unquote, the system is in crisis. He talks about the fact that rationing occurs on a daily basis. He talks about the fact that vast sums of money being injected into the system have not resolved this issue. And so Castonguay has really changed his mind.
Let me ask you a question. Is if his term is in crisis, correct?
Yes.
Would you say that the United States healthcare system is in crisis?
I think that the United States healthcare system faces enormous cost pressures. I think the Canadian system is falling apart at the seams.
So if the crisis of Canadian medicine is at a 10 out of 10, America is at a what?
I think it's a different problem. I mean, I think in Canada, people have difficulty accessing the health care they need. I mean, there are towns in Canada.
I know. Forgive me for interrupting your own point, because I'm going to quote you now. At least that somewhat mollifies what I'm doing to you. Folks, there is a point in this article. In Norwalk, Ontario, people participate in lotteries to win appointments with the local family doctor. Is that what you were going to cite?
I'm nothing if not consistent in my redundancy. Look, it's a good story, and I'm going to repeat it over and over again. I think it helps people understand. Look, you know, here's a town where there's such a crisis in getting access to a family doctor. I mean, we're not talking about some obscure cancer specialist or some neurosurgeon who's particularly capable. We're talking about a town, and, you know, in a typically Canadian compromise, what they do is they draw the names of people who want to see the family doctor and don't have access to a family doctor, and several people a week get drawn, and the town council calls these people up and tells them to come in for an appointment. It's humorous if it weren't so pathetic. And these are the types of shortages we see in Canada because, listening to American experts like Michael Moore, the suggestion is, wow, Canada did something very dramatic with primary care, hospital care. They reinvented the wheel. It isn't like that at all. The reason why Canadians pay less than Americans for health care is that health care is simply rationed. Everything is free. Nothing is readily available. And that's why you get those stories out of Southern Ontario, where you've got towns where literally you're having a lottery and you don't get, you know, your second mortgage paid or a new boat. You get a trip to the family doc.
1-8-PRAGER-776. If you are for nationalized health care or single payer health care or anything in that category, please call if you'd like to challenge or defend or whatever. I mean, here is your chance, because this is, to me, the most complex of issues. 1-8-PRAGER-776, my guest, Dr. David Gratzer, and his book is The Cure. Now, I want to go through this with you, because everybody I know, and I know many doctors privately, feel that the system is worse than ever. I don't know if you want to use the word crisis, but I'll give you one example. Many doctors are now simply opting out of all insurance. All. I know a person who is seeking neurological care from a traffic accident, and one after another just does not take any insurance.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, the level of frustration in the United States is so terribly high. I think people, both on the provider end and on the patient end, are just so enormously frustrated with the endless paperwork, with the constant frustration of finding people in network, out of network, of getting the care that they need.
And the lower and lower payments.
That's right. As I suggested a few moments ago, I'm not trying to minimize the issues with American healthcare. I think there's huge problems with American healthcare. Right now, I think the biggest crisis in the United States is one of cost. Whereas people in Canada and Britain and Sweden have access issues, in the United States it's that spiraling cost of healthcare. And I think that's really hitting middle America in the pocketbook, which is why I think it'll be a major issue in this election cycle.
Yeah, all right. So. It may be a distinction without much of a difference. In Canada, you can't get access because there's nobody to give it to you. And in America, many can't get access because it's too expensive. So what's the difference?
There are subtle differences. I think there's tremendous excellence in the United States. And I think you have the building blocks for a better system. Whereas in Canada, because of the enormous human resources crunch, it'll take years to resolve these problems, right? I mean, in Canada, you just simply can't turn around and say we need more doctors, so therefore we'll have more doctors. In the United States, I think there's tremendous excellence in the system, and I think you could make changes. But look, I'm not sure these systems are that fundamentally different. You see both of these systems develop out of the 1940s. In the United States, most people have private insurance. And the system results from an IRS ruling suggesting, because of wage and price controls, employers could pay health insurance premiums and pre-tax dollars. And so you get employers in the game, and they're paying for health care, and they're doing it really as a tax dodge. In what is an obscure idea before the Second World War, something like under 7% of employers are offering health insurance becomes fairly common after the Second World War, about a third of U.S. employers. And by the late 1980s, like 90% of U.S. employers are offering health insurance. And the way they're doing that is, you know, third-party payment. In Canada, in Britain, in Sweden, what you have is rising out of the Beveridge Report that's issued in the early 1940s in the United Kingdom. You have a belief in first-dollar coverage in private insurance. And so that is the dominant form of insurance in Britain and Canada, Sweden. And again, you have a system not unlike the United States, where people pay out-of-pocket practically nothing for the health care they receive. In the United States, for every dollar spent on health care, 13 cents comes out of an individual's pocket. Just imagine if we tried to do that with other basic needs like food, clothing, or shelter. Go to the supermarket and your boss is paying 87 cents on your grocery bill. Would you ever leave with half a cart full? In Canada, again, people pay very little directly. Most of it's government finance. And as a result, I think in both systems, you've messed up the basic economics. And in both systems...
All right, so on the basis of that, you have what you call the cure.
That's right.
All right, we'll hear what that is when we come back and take your calls. Dr. David Gratzer, author of The Cure, 1-8-PRAGER-776. This is the Dennis Prager Show. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show, and the subject is the most complex there is, I believe, for social policy, and that is the health care crisis, or just health care, period. Dr. David Gratzer, physician, senior fellow, Manhattan Institute, has written this book, The Cure. It's now in paperback, and he has a very powerful article in Investor's Business Daily, and he thinks that... good old capitalism can solve it, and he points to Canada, where the father of the Canadian social system, of the social system in terms of medical care, now terms the country's system in crisis and thinks that private doctors and private funding is necessary. Dr. Gratzer, in a nutshell, I want to take calls here momentarily because I want people to challenge from every part of the spectrum, but in a nutshell, if there is such a thing as a nutshell on this, what do you suggest?
Look, there is no one simple solution. We're talking about a sixth of the national economy. We're talking about $2.2 trillion or so in spending, both privately and publicly. But I would suggest the following. In 5/6 of the economy, we're pretty happy. Technology advances, prices fall, quality rises. We are not having a conversation today about the food crisis in America, the clothing crisis, the shelter crisis. We're having a conversation about healthcare, and I think it's because we've organized healthcare differently than those other basic needs. There, we have excessive government regulation. People pay relatively little out of pocket for the service they receive and so on. In 5/6 of the economy, the other 5/6 of the economy, we respect individual choice and competition. Or, to be more blunt, capitalism. That's what I think we ought to do more of with regard to health care.
All right, 1-8-PRAGER-776. There's a question from one listener immediately that I want to ask, but I'll let him. Jay in Long Beach, California, you're on with Dr. David Gratzer and Dennis Prager.
Hi, Dennis. Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
This is obviously going to be a huge issue in our upcoming election, Doctor. I was wondering if you could, in the simplest terms, explain to me and for everybody listening, how is it that the cost of medicine always manages to go up when the government gets involved?
It's not just when the government gets involved, but certainly that's true enough. You know, I think it just goes back to some of those economics we've been discussing before, with Medicare and Medicaid being introduced. Amy Finkelstein just produced some very good work out of MIT on this topic. Healthcare became just so much, quote-unquote, cheaper to the individual. And as a result, costs went up. You know, we don't see that in other parts of the economy. When there's technological advancement, no doubt there is technological advancement in medicine, but in other parts of the economy, technological advancement is usually accompanied by a fall in prices. Have you ever gone to Best Buy?
Yeah.
Sure.
I am very humble on this matter, which is not some trait that people necessarily identify with me, but I on this, I really am. because it is there's so many arguments here, but I will say that it seems to me too, Dr. Gratzer, that when the government begins to pay for anything, the price will rise. I mean, that's true around the world. It's true for bread in Egypt. I mean, it's true everywhere in every way. When the government guarantees a college education, it's going to be more expensive. Why not? The college knows it's going to get a ton of money. And so there's an original sin. That's my take, and apparently that's your take.
Absolutely. You know, there's a wonderful article in the New York Times that appeared yesterday that talked about how much a walker costs, the walker that an elderly person with, say, a bad hip might use. That if you or I go to a store and look at buying a walker, and again, you can look up the New York Times article off the top of my head, it would be $50, $60. Medicare pays $150. Why? Because, you know, government sets prices. You have some committee filled with very decent but hardworking individuals that are hopelessly unable to set prices who meet and decide on these things. And as a result, you have a huge discrepancy between what...
But all right, so this is what I don't understand then. Why do so many doctors opt out of state and federal funding? Because the funds are constantly being lowered to doctors.
Well, that's a recent trend. I mean, you have systems that they can't pay for. I mean, Medicare in the United States is trending towards insolvency. By 2030, it's going to chew up, a third of tax revenue or something absurd like that. And as a result, you increasingly have wage and price controls. And the way they're trying to, quote-unquote, reform those systems is simply cutting back on reimbursement rates to doctors. I mean, Congress today is voting on a plan that, if it passes, would cut reimbursement rates by 10%. I mean, that is not, you know, a sensible way of looking at how much, you know, a doctor should...
All right, so if you could wave a magic wand and stop all government payments for medicine, would you?
Right.
You would.
I don't think at this point in time you can scrap Medicare and Medicaid, okay? But I do think that we need to look at those programs and come up with more intelligent ways of running them.
Why I'm talking to you. What's a more intelligent way of running them?
Well, let me start with Medicaid. I mean, Medicaid is one of the fastest growing government programs. As you know, say in New York City, roughly one in four people are on Medicaid. Originally, it was intended for the poor. Now it covers huge numbers of people right across the country. Even the New York Times will acknowledge that Medicaid is rife with waste, fraud, and abuse. What's to be done? I think it's not unlike the welfare programs of old, owned by the federal government, owned by the state governments, and as a result, owned by neither. I would turn it over to the states, I would cap the amount of money the federal government is spending on it, and I would let the states innovate.
You would cap the exactly what?
I would cap, the federal government right now pays about 50 cents on the Medicare dollar, and the more the states spend, the more the federal government ponies up. I would cap it and turn it over to the states. And so the amount of federal contribution would remain the same whether or not states are dramatically expanding the program or innovating or what have you. In other words, I would give the states a tremendous incentive to reconsider the program and innovate. And I think some states are going to do like what Florida does.
What does Florida do?
They turned it over to some managed care companies, let them innovate. Some states would do what South Carolina did, which is...
It's too vague for me. Let them innovate. What did they innovate?
In Florida, people who are recipients of Medicaid get to pick from a menu of competing private insurance options, and they decide what health insurance they get. And it's a private program, and the state government simply funds it. In Florida...
as opposed to what?
As opposed to just paying out bills. So in most states with Medicaid, people just see the doctor.
I see. So we will fund your insurance payment? What will we? Exactly what will the state do then?
The state goes to be a payer rather than a provider of health care.
We'll be back in a moment. Take your calls on I consider us in crisis because of the solutions being offered, if nothing else. We'll be back in a moment. Dennis Prager here talking about solving the most complex problem, but in essence, I happen to agree with my guest. We're talking about health care. And the I look at these systems in Canada, Britain, elsewhere, falling apart with national health care systems. There's a lottery in a city in Ontario. You win a lottery, you get, literally, you win a lottery and you get to see a family practitioner. And folks, the principle is, seems to me to be just incontrovertible. When the government pays for something, the price goes up. It's so obvious. Because it's unlimited. And then if you start limiting, then the prices go down. And now doctors won't take insurance. Or they won't take Medicare patients or Medicaid patients or whatever, and it's unbelievable. And so why don't we pay for health care unless, and here I would offer an amendment, which you may or may not accept, I don't know, and that is with regard to catastrophic care. I mean, no, I can't, and the vast majority of Americans cannot afford a medical catastrophe. A cancer surgery, prolonged radiation, chemotherapy, 2 weeks in a hospital, let alone more. I can't afford it. You can't afford it. What do you suggest in that regard?
That's a legitimate rule for insurance. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's where we need health insurance, right? Look, do you happen to own a car?
Yeah, of course.
Sure. I bet you've got some sort of car insurance.
Well, yeah, that's right. Well, why isn't that a good example? That's right. Go on.
Well, I mean, you can finish this point as well.
No, you can. You do it. Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. You're a gracious host, even if sometimes you seem frustrated with me. Look, your car is supposed to cover, your car insurance covers you if, God forbid, you get into an accident this afternoon and your car is totaled, right? Your car insurance does not cover you for nicks and scratches. Your car insurance doesn't cover you if, my goodness me, your tank of gas is running low and you have to go to a service.
By the way, let me add to your point with a personal anecdote about the difference between having somebody else pay for you and me paying for me. I was in an accident with a driver and I realized that I could, I found an independent contractor who could repair the injury to my car, if I may use that term, much cheaper than what the insurance company would have had to pay out. And so I never reported the accident, took care of it on my own, and everybody was happy. The insurer didn't have to pay out the money. I didn't have to have on my insurance record any, taking any money out. And I paid out of my own pocket far less.
Sure, and look at all the things you did there, which, by the way, we do from practically another good in service. You shopped around, you thought about things, you hesitated because it was coming out of your wallet. I mean, we need to do more of that in healthcare. Obviously, there are limits. Obviously, what we don't want is somebody getting into a terrible accident and hesitating to go to the emergency room. But much of healthcare isn't quite like that.
By the way, I would like people to hesitate before going to the emergency room a little more than they now do.
Well, not
and emergency rooms are filled with people who shouldn't be there.
That is true. My point was, let me clarify. I feel I need to give a Clintonian clarification. My point was, if you're in a life-threatening situation,
of course.
But you bring up another point. You know, our emergency departments in America are not just emergency departments. They also function as 24/7 family doctor's offices. You know, recently I had lunch with some executives for a Fortune 500 company. They're trying to do everything right to reduce health costs. They've got wellness programs. They've got physician directors. They've got 7 supercomputers crunching numbers. They turn to me at the end of the afternoon. They say, we're really paying so much more now for emergency care than we ever have. Now, that, my goodness me, I guess a lot of people in this company are having accidents. Nothing like that. This company, with a relatively little copay, people can see their family doctor 9 to 5, and they pay like $7 out of pocket, or they can go to the emergency room whenever they want and pay $70. Since in most major cities, family doctors run 9 to 5, cost it out. Most people don't want to take off an afternoon and lose wages. So what they do is they pay a bit more out of pocket. But for the employer, it's huge expenses. That's my point.
Hold on with that point. And we'll take your calls that are challenging to Dr. Gratzer, his book, The Cure, up at PragerRadio.com. It is said that 2 out of every 6 people who contemplate medical care go nuts. That is the general, that is the latest assessment. One third lose their minds. I am speaking to one of the two thirds who has not yet lost his mind.
That might be overly generous, but fair enough.
I think the argument could be made that one can go mad contemplating the medical, how to solve medical care in the Western world. Anyway, it is Dr. David Gratzer. And I'm going to test you now. It says that you are from Canada, live both in Canada and the U.S., and it says the name of the Canadian city in which you live. I would like you to pronounce it as Canadians do. 1 minute before you do, Alan, will you please put on the TikTok to give Dr. Gratzer a sense of being on a quiz show at this time?
I'm going to go with Toronto, and that's my final answer. I was going to call a lifeline, but Alan's point might be more important.
I was under the impression that you from Canada say Toronto. Toronto.
How did I pronounce it?
I heard a stronger second T than I am used to. But that might be your New York influence. So I didn't
wish to shock or provoke you, Dennis. It's just not in my nature.
No, it isn't indeed. You're a good soul to take all the abuse I've been leveling at you, actually.
It's all in good fun.
It certainly is. All right, his book is The Cure, and it is published by a terrific publisher, Encounter Books. It's in paper, and it's at PragerRadio.com. All right, well, let's take some calls here from folks around the U.S. at least, although we have a lot. Well, there is now a Canadian Prager listeners group, but we're not on the stations there. They hear us on the Internet. Okay, let's see here. And let's begin with this challenge from Dallas, Texas, and William. William, Dennis Prager, Dr. Gratzer, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me, Dennis, and I saw you here in Dallas Monday night.
Yeah.
It was very good.
Thank you.
There's a few things that seem to be bantered about in this healthcare discussion I'd like to comment on. One is that whenever there's any kind of proposal, some of the proposals that Senator Clinton came up with, the automatic answer is that's nationalized healthcare, and we don't want nationalized healthcare because that's what Canada has and Sweden and Great Britain. I don't believe any of the candidates have ever suggested what is I define as nationalized healthcare. And I think what the doctor did before, nationalized healthcare being when the government owns the hospitals, owns the clinics, and employs the doctors. The only form of that we have in the United States now, I think the only form we ever will have, is the VA hospital. The government owns the hospital, owns the clinics, and employs the doctors. None of them have suggested that. The second thing I think people banter about, and Dennis, you made a couple of comments, that doctors are stopping taking insurance or doctors are stopping taking Medicare. That's virtually impossible for most doctors to do because virtually all their patients have insurance or Medicare. For example, a cardiologist who says, I won't take Medicare, will be out of business if most of his patients are on Medicare. So I'd like the doctor to comment on this national health care issue.
Well, you may be right about the great number. All I can tell you is, and this is, and I acknowledge it's purely anecdotal, but doctor after doctor that I have heard of through patients or that I know of directly have, in fact, opted out of the system. So I may simply know a very skewed segment of the medical profession, and I mean that it may well be, and I may know a skewed segment of patients, but I had not heard about this nearly as much years ago as I do today. But Dr. Gratzer, he had two challenges. Why don't you take the second first or the first first?
Dennis, I'll start by defending your point of view. I mean, we do have statistics on doctors who are refusing new Medicaid patients. The Center for Health Systems Change publishes these stats, and you know they're quite high. It's like 20-25% of doctors are refusing new Medicaid patients. How many are refusing all Medicaid patients? I couldn't.
Okay. Well, all right. So
there are docs who are frustrated, right? you know, with regard to the rally cry, so often we hear that, you know, whatever change is going to take place is going to lead to nationalized health care. You know, I'm not quite sure I agree with your definition of nationalized health care. Certainly in countries like Britain and in Sweden, the government doesn't necessarily own all hospitals. The government doesn't necessarily own all clinics. But the government does fund the vast majority of health care. Is anyone putting on the table a proposal like that in defense of Senator Obama? Well, you know, technically, no. But what I would suggest to you is that in this coming number of years, I'm not talking about the next 700 years, the next 70 years, maybe in the next 7 years, the United States is going to have to make a fundamental choice. Either we're going to continue to expand government, and government is increasingly going to finance healthcare and regulate it and govern over it, or we're going to have to try and do something different than the path we've been taking for the last 30 years.
Exactly. Now, what about medical insurance accounts?
Health savings accounts, I think, were a wonderful idea. It's one of the very few things that I think Congress got right in 2003. I think, unfortunately, it's too restrictive. But I think we need to loosen up its structure. I could go into technical details, but I don't think that's important right now. Look, we need to move away from this concept of health insurance covering everything. Like we talked about car insurance, you know, you don't want it covering everything because that's not how insurance works. And I think health insurance ought to move away from, you know, the annual physical or the sprained ankle treatment or the quick trip to the emergency department and go back to a definition of, you know, God forbid you're in a very serious accident, then it kicks in. Health savings accounts are one step in that direction, not the only step, but one step.
All right, when we come back with the final segment, a quick list of the three things that we most need to do. So if you'll prepare that, Dr. Gratzer, that would be appreciated. The book is The Cure, and I will read, if not get, stay on if you got on, because I will try to summarize your question if I don't actually get to you. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show. Dr. David Gratzer, his book, The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare. I agree entirely. It's a terrible crisis, and it's getting worse. But the overhead of doctors is now surpassing what they get from the government, and they will take fewer and fewer of you paid by the government. There will be just an ongoing collapse. What government pays for why do we make this one exception in healthcare? Why, folks? Why? What is the rational reason? Because it's important. There are many important. Food is important. Food is important. Government doesn't pay for your food. For the very destitute, there are, in fact, food stamps. So there'll be health stamps for the destitute who qualify. Drives me crazy. Okay. Dr. Gratzer, quick, three recommendations.
Three simple ideas that I think would fundamentally change American healthcare. Idea number one, health insurance ought to be more like every other type of insurance. We've already talked about that today, Dennis. Idea number two is we need to foster competition. For 40 years, government policy has been regulate first, ask questions later. You know, I work out of an office in New York City. Were I to buy health insurance there, I would pay four times more than I would pay in neighboring Connecticut for the same health insurance from the same company covering the same things, because in the Empire State, they've regulated practically everything, including, I believe, even hair toupees be covered as part of your basic policy. We need more competition, not just with health insurance per se, but with hospitals, with clinics, with everything. And idea number three is I think we need to turn Medicaid over to the states and let the states innovate, because that's really where we're going to see charity care go back and be reinvented.
All right, let me summarize a couple of questions here. David in Minnesota says, you're originally from Canada. He says, each province of Canada has its own health care system. There's no national system. It's a correction. Is he right?
Sort of. Individual plans are provincially administered, but everyone is governed by the Canada Health Act, which, you know, basically means that the plans are identical across the country.
Fred in Philadelphia wants to know if we could reduce cost of health care by increasing the number of doctors and making them publish a price list.
Why not? I think we should have more transparency, not just for doctors, but for hospitals, for everyone. And it's not just about price lists. I think ultimately what we want is quality data. If you need a heart surgery, shouldn't you know how many deaths your local hospital has had with such a surgery? I think if we have more competition and more innovation, slowly we would see that. I mean, gosh, you can get information on your dishwasher. Shouldn't you be able to get information on your heart surgery?
All right, and you can see his article in Investor's Business Daily on Canadian healthcare. Dr. Gratzer, stay well. We'll have you on again.
An absolute pleasure. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. This is the Dennis Prager Show. We continue.
Okay, you know you owe the IRS. You know it's a big debt that's growing bigger every day, and you're painfully aware the IRS will never, ever leave you alone. Now here's what you may not know. It can all stop with a click or a call. The experts at Effector Tax Solutions can stop IRS enforcement in as little as one business day, and their work is guaranteed in writing. When you ask Effector for help, ex-IRS agents immediately begin putting their insider knowledge of the system to work for you, getting levies lifted or released, filing old returns, scouring for ways to reduce your tax debt, giving back your peace of mind, and it's absolutely free to discuss your case. So call Effector now at 866-524-0324 or click on the Effector logo located on the media player. Call now and receive 50% off your representation fee. 866-524-0324.